You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 78, November 3rd. Steve, I'm out in Arizona, but unfortunately it is not for first pitch. I am desperately close, but out here on a work trip and got to get back for another commitment. So we're way far away from each other right now, but got a great show lined up talking about a little Halloween theme. Trick or treat, was it legit in 2022? Love the topic, Steve. Love to be connecting with you and talking about baseball and not Caterpillar machinery out here on this work trip. How's it going, man?
Yeah, it's good, man. I know we texted, you know, just talking topics and figuring out logistics since you're, you know, a further time zone away and it being the off season and whatnot, but I really meant to give you a much harder time for you being in Arizona during first pitch and not going to first pitch or just catching a fall league game, whatever, you know, go see your boy Jordan Walker, who's hitting a home run like seemingly every night now. You know, I'm gonna have to, I'm not gonna let you live this one down, but you know, understand that life gets in the way sometimes, especially when we have to scramble to record a podcast here.
Listen, it's unforgivable. I'm 2 hours away from where most of the action is
okay,
happening.
Okay, so you're not that close. It's still, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not right there.
It's like you're in Scottsdale or anything like that, or exactly. Close to Surprise or wherever, you know.
I did look up Tucson, who I know formerly had a team. It was kind of a tough Google, but there were no games scheduled here, which I would have been all over. But anyway, yeah, you know, we're struggling through this mountain time zone. I don't know why they're sometimes like 3 hours behind you, sometimes 2 hours, but
yeah,
we're doing the
savings, yeah. It's hard enough to get on the same schedule when, you know, I'm normally Eastern and you're Central. You know, I always know the time in St. Louis because we record a podcast together. But yeah, another time zone. It's a real, it's a curveball, pun intended.
It is. And we're going to be talking curveballs today, Steve. That was my bad segue. but we've got a fun show topic. When you threw it out, I was a big fan of leaning into the Halloween season with a little trick or treat. To basically say, of these high-performing players, whether they were breakouts or just kind of did what we were hoping they would, is it legit and is it a treat for 2023, or are we running a risk that it was a trick? So a lot of fun. Love the episode. Love having the listeners here with us every 2 weeks. Up until February after the Super Bowl, you guys can find us on here. Of course, follow us on Wins Above Pod. I'm at @Van_Verified. Steve is at Stav8818. But housekeeping aside, Steve, I'm interested to hear your take on the topic. This is still very early in the offseason where we're kind of formulating opinions, so I think it's a good one.
Yeah, these are always, I don't know about you, but these are always the toughest players for me to gauge. Whether it's one good year, one bad year, maybe the bad year is a little bit, you know, you could find a narrative and reasons as to why someone's underperforming. Like someone today asked in the Discord about Trevor Story, and I forget who it was, but they put out a tweet like just about what Trevor Story went through last year. Just a new team, got hit by a pitch, I think was like super sick or something else happened early in the season. And then got hit in the head, had another injury. So, like, everything that could go wrong. Like, so you could easily talk yourself, oh, like, obviously Story was horrible last year. All these things happened. But for guys that we talk about that are, like, pop up or have career years, it's like, all right, did they, especially when the underlying skills don't change that much, like, is this all luck? Is there something that actually changed? It's the hardest profile or, you know, quote unquote breakout for me to gauge each year. So I'm glad we're tackling this as like our first true off-season player analysis, you know.
Another thing I like about it, Steve, is it feels like, you know, fast forward from now till February when we're in the throes of all the industry draft trends and everybody's got kind of their flag plant sleepers and all that stuff. The names here, I think, with the exception of two or three, are kind of names that you might get faced with in a draft room, and they're the ones that you kind of look at twice and you're like, ooh, do I have a strong opinion one way or another on this guy? Like, they're not all, you know, screaming breakout or screaming bust. They're ones that, like, you kind of conveniently ignore because you don't know what to make of it. You know?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, you sometimes just pass them over because you don't know what to do with them. And, you know, you like 2 years ago or whatever, you know, even in season, like Brandon Drury, like I just passed over because, like, even if he had a hot week, it's like, oh, that's Brandon Drury. But I didn't even give it a second thought, right? Like, to pick it up and get that great year, like a guy that we'll talk about in a little bit. So I'm excited to get into it and break down some names.
Well, let's do it. And I want to start out with one that, of course, after we say that, this is a name that's going to be talked about a lot, and for good reason. And it's Nathaniel Lowe, who is also going to have a little bit of tax on him. So in our pitcherless 12-team mock draft that we did, kind of our too early mock, Lowe went at, let's see, it was middle of the sixth round. So that was basically pick 66, which, again, last year at this time, you would have been like, what? He's going there? But Nathaniel Lowe is a guy that, to your earlier point on did they make some changes, we saw a different Nathaniel Lowe last year. We batted 302, 27 homers, solid counting stats with the 150 runs plus RBIs combined. You know, when you can get nearly 30 homer power with a 300 average, and we've talked about how first base can kind of be sneaky shallow this year, Nathaniel Lowe is definitely one that you're going to have an opinion, because if you do want him, it's popping up in like the sixth round in that range. So talk to me about Nathaniel Lowe, Steve, and let's try to work our way toward the Halloween trick or treat analysis here.
Yeah, and we talked about it, I think, on the show about the mock draft last week. Nate Lowe's like kind of like a parachute first baseman, right? Like, we had that. I don't know if we stole that term from somewhere. Or like, you know, you see like all these top first basemen go, and then it's like, oh crap, I got to grab a first baseman, and Nate Lowe's there. I don't know if he was after, like, before Jose Abreu, maybe right in the same range where he goes and people are panicking.
He went two rounds earlier. So you're
two rounds,
Steve,
earlier.
Like, Matt Olson went middle of the third, and then after Nathaniel Lowe.
Yep.
Yes,
he's,
and then the after him, there was two rounds later in round nine. So you're absolutely right, but continue.
But, you know, there's been a lot to like about Nate Lowe, specifically his barrel rate throughout his career. His lowest was last year at 9.5, which is still pretty good. This year was up at 9.9%, which is a 68 percentile barrel rate. So not bad, but, you know, he paired that with an 89 percentile max exit velocity, 75th percentile hard hit percentage, and it's going to lead to the good numbers that you see this year. Mm-hmm. What changed, or, you know, what you would, I think, look at to say, hey, this is a treat, not a trick, is the launch angle. That was a problem in 2021. He had a 5-degree launch angle. So despite him hitting the ball hard last year, there just wasn't a translation to power. And I think he had, what, like, he had 18 home runs and a 264 average. So for first base, very middling. Bumped that up to the 9.8% it is this year, or 8.2% it is this year. That leads to a 27 homer, you know, 302 average, sort of a breakout there. And it's backed up a bit too. The XBA was 275, so sure, that might be a little lucky, but it doesn't scream that, oh, this guy should hit like 250. You'd easily still take Nate Lowe's season if he hit 275, right?
Yeah, I think that's, when I'm looking at the broader landscape for first baseman, it seems like, you know, you're going to be able to get the power, right? Like, if you wait, you're going to get a Rowdy Tellez who, you know, should be like a true 30, 35 homer guy. The trade-off is the average is plummeting. So even if Lowe does round out as like a true 270, 75 guy, that's a big difference if he's 30 homer pop. And to echo your point on the launch angle, which still you'd like to see that come up a little bit, but it's all telling a cohesive story where the ground ball rate dropped off from 54.5% to 48%, traded all that out for line drives, which is going to help the, of course, help the launch angle there. But then when you look at his run value against pitch types, the slider, he had a positive 14 run value in 2022. And in 2021, it was just a 4. So he raised that significantly. What that means for actual numbers is he batted 219 against sliders in 2021, batted 330 against sliders last year.
And so it's a slider league, so if you're going to make an improvement on a pitch, that's a great one to do it on, right?
Yeah, and it's one where you know that they're hanging in the zone. You can kind of, you know, golf ball those or at least do some line drives that'll help the batting average. So overall, I mean, it's really tough to quantify, like, the draft day, like, what round and how soon is too soon. But I think we're kind of leaning toward this being a treat.
Yeah, and I think it's an okay move to make. Hey, if you miss out on that Olsen tier, like, you know, is for you. I know they went two rounds separate in a two-round difference in the mock draft, but Abreu or Nate Lowe? I know Abreu still is a free agent, and who knows where he's going to be and is older, but who are you going with there?
Yeah, I mean, the lineup context will be interesting there. For Abreu, I think it's like the fact that he only had 15 homers across 157 games, I think like the average discrepancy, like if Abreu is a 290 guy and Lowe is a 275 guy, I think I got to lean low. So I'm okay with that. Now, whether that's a two-round jump, who's to say? But low, you know, Abreu, you have to factor in to some extent that he's going to be 36. So it's like, yeah, I think I'm liking the 27-year-old low
yep,
on prior, that one, Steve.
You know, power peaks at that age. I'm with you.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll talk about, you know, another first baseman. It'll be interesting to put that in context. But the next one I wanted to hit on, who's another name that we've talked about a little bit. I promise we'll get to the ones that are a little bit more under the radar. But Dansby Swanson is definitely one that I could see kind of falling to a point where a lot of managers are like, oh, man, I have to take him here, right? Because he had a phenomenal season, but there's a little bit of skepticism, which is why we're putting him under the microscope here. So Swanson, in case you missed it, fantastic year, batted 277, 25 homers, 18 steals for the power-speed combo there. Pretty much 100 runs, 100 RBIs. So right out of the gate, I think we were talking about him as a top 20 5x5 guy in terms of how they finished last year. But in our PL mock, Swanson went 81. So a huge discount there. I know there's a little uncertainty on where he'll end up, but it's worth the analysis, Steve, because some of the numbers under the radar are calling into question. So you got the 277 batting average, but the XBA beneath that was a 257. So big 20-point drop there. In terms of the plate skills, we didn't really see any crazy improvement. In fact, the K's actually went up slightly. The walks went
like
down
looking
slightly.
At his numbers, sorry to interrupt, but like
yeah.
For the last since basically 2018, like it's eerily similar every
same guy.
Year. Or sorry, 2019 when he bumped the barrel rate up to 10%. It's the same thing every single year. It's scary how similar all of his numbers are.
It is.
It's
He's
wild.
The same guy. And yeah, like if you want to look at the good stuff for Swanson, it was the best launch angle of his career by a little bit. The hard hit rate went up 3.6%, which is not insignificant. But the biggest thing, which is a volatile thing, is that he attempted 25 steals last year and got caught stealing 7 times. So 25 steals he attempted this past year. In 2021, that number was cut in half at just 12 attempted steals.
Contract year, he was going as much as he could. And then once he signs a new deal, he is not going to be going as much. I think you can pencil in for basically what he was from 2019 to 2022. You know, 25 homers, 250 to 270, 75.
Seven to ten steals.
But hey, no, you know, the bases are getting bigger. Maybe
that's true.
He could make that more like a 12 to 15. So I still don't think it's a trick to put it in a player a little game, but I think that was the peak Dansby Swanson year. but I still think he's a really good shortstop for fantasy.
So it's at least baked in on our too early mock here where he went 81st overall. So let's just play the game real quick because, let's see, after Swanson, huge 3-round gap until Carlos Correa went, but O'Neill Cruz and Wander Franco went right next to Swanson. Does this overall feel like kind of the right range, Steve, in terms of position?
It does. I mean, Correa is like a better hitter and just a real-life player, but he just doesn't steal bases, and sometimes it seems like he's, you know, it would be impossible for Correa to hit more than like 25 homers, despite how good of a hitter he actually is. Whatever, he's a much better real-life player than fantasy Correa is, so... I think there just might be a tax on Swanson because of the steals that I don't think will be there next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as long as the discount is baked in, we got to see where he ends up, right?
Yeah,
I think
for sure.
The counting stats are such a big thing.
If he signs back with the Braves, like the cost might go up just because the lineup context, he's going to lead off for one of the best lineups in the league, is comfortable there, you know, it's a good ballpark to hit, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's keep moving. You mentioned Brandon Drury, Steve. So take the floor here, but Drury, obviously, I mean, he was kind of certainly a first-half all-star, but pretty much a breakout throughout the whole year. When you look at the final line, 28 homers, batted .263, good counting stats, and at a tough, shallow position again. So talk to me about Drury, what you're thinking. I totally agree when you threw his name on the rundown. This is going to be one that is kind of a head-scratcher on what to make of.
He had by far the best Bauer rate of his career, the highest max EV since his age 23 season in 2016, had the best walk rate at 6.7% since 2018, which was just... a limited number of plate appearances here, and just 86 plate appearances in 2018. So there's a lot under the hood that show that it's legit. It's definitely easy to write off, oh, hey, you know, it was his age 30 season, sort of out of nowhere, and, you know, easy to sort of gloss over. But I mean, a 10.4% Bauer rate after he, you know, barely clipped 9 one year in 2019. And you know, I don't think that he's this 260, 800 OPS guy, but I think he might be sort of what the X stats saying, like a 240, 420 slug, you know, maybe a 750 OPS, which is a fine corner. It just might be, depending on cost, you know, I'd buy him as a useful corner infielder, I guess, is my long-winded way of saying that. I wouldn't just write him off. Like, I think Brandon Drury is a useful depth piece. Maybe not in a 12-teamer, but in a 15-teamer for sure.
Yeah, and again, I think you're seeing the discount here. If it reflects our mock draft, he went 151 overall, which in a 12 team was, let's see, what round? Middle of the 13th round. So you're not being asked to sign up for what he did last season overall, which is probably correct because he had a pretty rough second half. And I know we always talk about the pressing. Mm-hmm. There was clearly some weird stuff going on at the Padres in general. But yeah, first half with the Reds, an 864 OPS, and then the second half with the Padres, a 725 OPS, so a massive slide there.
Maybe a cheap way of doing it is to sort of cut the difference. I know Cincinnati's an amazing place to hit. San Diego is not, and basically everyone that went there besides Manny Machado this year really couldn't hit. I mean, even Juan Soto wasn't Juan Soto in San Diego. I think Josh Bell hit like under 200 from the trade when he had a great first half. So maybe not knock him as much as you would think for that second half in San Diego. I'm assuming he's a free agent this year. Yes, he is. So again, I guess we'll have to see where he ends up, but could be an interesting name for sure for a team to take Flyer on him.
Yeah. I think as long as you're signing up for, you know, 20, I mean, assuming he has the playing time, 20, 25 homers.
Yeah, that might be on the high end.
800 OPS.
Yeah.
I mean, he went on the bench, 18 in the first half. I guess that was with Cincinnati. So, yeah, it's tough. But, okay, so I think that one is a trick on the overall stat line. I think,
yes, final
verdict
trick for him.
Trick. Yes. Okay. Let's talk about a first baseman in Christian Walker, Steve. So we've talked about Drury eligible, Nate Lowe. Christian Walker is just kind of this oatmeal graduation, because I think he's going to be kind of a sleeper name, kind of like we saw with CJ Krohn a couple years back. Walker, man, 242 average, 36 bombs, couple steals for good measure, and 84 runs, 94 RBI, even with Arizona. So there's a lot to like with Walker. I think, you know, beneath the hood, when you look at the barrel rate at 11.5%, pretty much doubled from what he did the year before. The XBA on top of that 242 average was a 257. So now you're looking at a guy who potentially could even contribute an average if things fall his way, who's a 35 homer bopper hitting right in the heart of an order. What are your thoughts on Christian Walker here, Steve? I think there's some optimism.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this is an easy treat for me, especially after, you know, being so in on him early last season and being hesitant to pick him up in a lot of leagues when I should have just listened to my own advice. But, you know, we talked about how the batted ball metrics in the first half, despite him having some good power numbers, that he was getting unlucky, especially with balls in play. He had just a 204 average in the first half, but in the second half he hit 285. So wow. He had 14 homers in, you know, like 80 less plate appearances, 73 less plate appearances.
It's like a league-winning second half
there. Yeah, he still had 14 homers compared to the 22 in the first half, so the pace was right on there. Maybe not exactly with the power, but pretty damn close. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just a monster second half, and I think that's sort of more of what he was – it made up for what he deserved, right? Like, it kind of split the difference, and I just think Walker has a great profile. There was clearly something going on that he fixed mechanically from 2020 and 2021 when he had just that 6.4% barrel rate. And then it was back in line with 2018, 2019, when he was this, you know, useful fantasy power asset from first base. Like, he had, you know, 29 homers in 2019 and was sort of this popular breakout pick. And didn't really follow through in the shortened season in 2021. But this year, it all sort of came together. And, you know, he, on top of that, he had the best, you know, plate skills-wise, plate discipline numbers of his career. He struck out under 20% of the time, walked over 10% of the time. Like, if he had any batted ball luck in the first half, like, this is, like, the top, like, everyone's, like, league-winning first baseman, right? You know, that's how good Brandon Drury was, and I don't see a reason why he can't
Christian Walker. Christian Walker.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Christian Walker. Yes, sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. I mean, I'm backing everything you're saying, Steve. I love the plate discipline, and I think there could be, I mean, this is a little speculation, but hear me out. 2019 and 2020, the hard hit rate was around 49%, which is markedly higher than it was in 2021 and this past year. So there might even be room for improvement, especially when you consider that in 21 he dealt with an oblique issue where he went on the IL more than once. And I'm wondering if last year was just pretty much like a get right season where he stayed healthy. One thing that really jumps off is basically the changes against fastballs. So in 2021, Walker batted 194 with a 349 slug against fastballs, and last year batted 253. So up 60 points there with a 584 slug compared to that 349. So crushing fastballs, you know, a full healthy season. And yeah, like you said, I mean, if it's something where his average can even come up a little bit, man, this is an absolute steal. And in our draft, let's see, he went 120 overall. So that was after a guy like CJ Krohn, where I'm kind of thinking maybe this is the new CJ Krohn and we shouldn't be taking him after. What are your thoughts on that?
I totally agree. I'd much rather have Christian Walker than CJ Krohn, despite that Coors Field bump. You know, we saw maybe that's some recency bias with how bad Krohn was in the second half. He did start out on fire. Who knows? Maybe there was some injury or something bothering him that was going on there. But I think cost inclusive and just looking at like the underlying metrics, like Christian Walker is, you know, his Statcast page is bright red, just all around the board. So I like Walker a lot and think he could be a great value in 2023.
It's a treat. The verdict is in. So on to the next hitter and our final hitter. It's one we've mentioned, Steve, but I think it's also one that, again, will be kind of a tough one to make sense of, and it's Andrés Giménez with the Guardians, who had a great season, batted .297. I love the .371 OBP, mm-hmm. and even a .466 slug. Translated on the back of the baseball card, 17 homers, 20 steals, offering the speed there. It's the counting stats that really kind of held his overall rank down, just 66 runs, 69 RBIs, because he was kind of just stuck in the middle part of that Guardians order. I'm shocked that he didn't move up with his speed and his ability to get on base, but maybe that's where some upside is. However, you got to pay for the speed. As we all know, he went 90th in our mock draft. Mm-hmm. So this is one where I'm really curious, Steve. I don't have my mind made up, but I think there's enough to be excited about. I just don't know how that translates to, you know, when you're going to kind of hitch your seventh, eighth round draft pick to somebody.
Yeah, it's a tough one. These are tough profiles to gauge. Just whenever it's propped up by the steals, kind of like Swanson is this year, it's hard to be like, all right, am I just paying for like an empty steals guy? Is this just like look nice because he had 17 homers and 20 steals? What do I do here? That being said, I think I'm going to lean more treat on this one. The plate skills are good and good enough. He improved on the strikeout rate this year, upped his walk rate a little bit. So sure, yeah, a lot of that OBP is in that .297 average, but he seems like a guy that has a good hit tool, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to bottom out and go back to that, you know, .218 average that he struggled with in 2021, his first year with Cleveland. You saw it with the Mets when he first came up. He had .263 in that shortened season and looked, you know, you saw the upside with that hit tool and some decent pop, and he got 8 steals that year in just 50 games. So this was kind of like the proration of that first year with the Mets, maybe with a little more power than you could have even expected. Mm-hmm. You know, at age 24, he's kind of growing into that. Has a decent max exit velocity, 61st percentile, right? He's at that 109, which is, that's more than enough raw power, right, for sure, to back up those 18 homers or 17 homers that he had. So I think this is a good one to pay up for. I know that you could kind of poke some holes and see that the average exit velo and the hard hit percentage isn't great, and neither is the barrel rate, but I don't think you're going to get that from this, like, just profile of a guy, right? Like, if you're just looking at that with at the 5'11 second baseman, I don't think you're going, it's kind of like fitting a square peg in a round hole with that profile. So 15 homers, 20 steals with like a .270 average is kind of like a floor. I like it.
Yeah, I think the steals are legit. If you look kind of just simply at his games played throughout his career, mm-hmm. with his stolen bases, it's pretty much all tracked consistently to be a 20-plus steals guy. He's super efficient on the base paths. Again, I think there is some room for him to slide up in the order. It's the pop where I don't know that I'm buying that he's like 17 homer type of guy. But I think if you are looking at him next to a Tommy Edman, for example, which might be a popular comparison, I think it's reasonable that there's a little bit more pop, 15 homers, maybe up to 25 steals, probably around a 275 average. I think that at this spot in the draft, that's kind of a good way to go. It's just the one thing that worries me a little bit is there is a lot of whiff in his game to only have a 20% strikeout rate. So I wonder if that might have a little bit of regression and pull down the average. But I think if you bake that in and don't count on him being a 300 hitter, I like it. I don't think I'm going to be necessarily targeting Jimenez, but if my drafts are shaking out to where I really need speed, and that's obviously a positional need, I don't think I'm going to run away from it, you know?
Yeah, and this is kind of like dumbing down the analysis here, but like, how many guys that have 20 steals had an 837 OPS and a 140 WRC plus, right? Like, when you look at like your 20 plus steal guys, like a lot of the times you're talking about like, okay, is this guy going to be able to hit enough to like keep his everyday job and like have an OPS over 650, right? Like, he had an 837 OPS last year. That's pretty rare from like your speed first guys, which kind of what Jimenez might be, but I think he's a better hitter than most. So I think I might be targeting him a bit next year.
Okay. So potential target. I mean, well, you know, that also is a good pitching spot of the draft as well.
Sure,
You know, I know that I don't have to convince you on that.
But yes.
Yeah, that overall, though, I think we're at least in the middle, if not calling it a treat with Jimenez. So that kind of rounds out the hitter side of this, Steve. And we got a nice slate of five pitchers we're going to get into as well. But first, we're going to take a quick ad break, and we'll be right back. All right, Steve, I'm dying to talk about a player who has basically been a bit of a gamer cheat in my home league for the manager who's always winning. And it's Framber Valdez, who he just continues to have kind of this Astros devil magic, if I can say that, as a Cardinals fan.
Sure.
And
I'll allow it.
You know, it throughout the playoffs and just in general, he seems to always overperform his underlying metrics. And at some point, you kind of got to scratch your head and be like, this seems like it is legit and potentially undervalued. So Framber, just to rattle off the stats, 17-6 record, plenty of wins there with the Astros, which I know is one of your lessons learned, Steve, and I agree that we need to look for some wins where we can find them. 200 innings pitched, 194 Ks, a 2.82 ERA, and a 1.16 whip. So a phenomenal year for Valdez. I think what probably jumps out first for us is that the K rate isn't as high as some of the names that he's being drafted around. And then, like I said, the underlying stuff, you know, a 3.31 xERA, so, you know, about a half a run higher than his actual stats. But, yeah, a lot we can break down here. I've got my thoughts, but I want to open it up, see what you're thinking on Framber.
Yeah, Framber's like always an auto avoid for me, just because he doesn't get the Ks. Like, I'm a sucker for that, and it's definitely a blind spot in my process for looking at pitchers. I mean, 2021 he had a 70% ground ball rate. Last year he had a 67.4% ground ball rate. So, like, you're not going to do any damage when basically everything that it's just insane. Like, you know, if you add in what pop-ups were this year, that was at 2.45%. Like,
dude,
70% of the balls of player ground balls or pop-ups. What?
Let me jump in here, because I was already marveling at that, and then I jumped over to FanGraphs and was looking at like batted ball leaderboards. The first one they show is the ground ball to fly ball rate, which is kind of a weird stat, but
yep.
Framber is number one in the league with a ground ball to fly ball rate of 4.16, which doesn't mean a ton for the average listener, but the second place guy beneath Fromber's 4.16 was Logan Webb at 2.38. So he is almost
double,
twice as good as any other leader when it comes to getting grounders over fly balls. And I was just like, holy smokes, man. You like add that in with the fact that he's top 25 at like soft contact. Mm-hmm. Like it just starts to make sense.
And then he bumped up the K rate too to 23.5%. So like if that happens, then
it's not nothing. Yeah. You know, like yeah. like with the volume, because
you don't need a 30% strikeout rate when you're getting 70% ground balls, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And like his sinker velo climbed from 92.5 up to 94. The curveball itself is a really good whiff pitch. So I think he's just really found his groove as a pitcher. Now, whether or not, you know, that'll get adjustments, who's to say? But overall, looking at our draft, the fact that he went pick 101. So I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure that was probably like SP20, something like that.
Yeah, maybe further. There were some pitcher runs in there, but yeah, and also the fact that he doesn't have to rely on the strikeout, he's able to go longer in games. I mean, he was one of what, three or four guys that had 200 innings this year. So, I know that was a career high, and he went just 134 the year before, but I don't see why he can't do something similar with this profile again next year. So I think it's a treat for sure. I think you might be on the same page there.
Yep, for sure. And it looks like more like SP beyond 30. So you're right, he was kind of wedged in between Robbie Ray and Tristan McKenzie. But yeah, overall I think this is just a really reliable guy that you can kind of count on some volume and wins, which I know we talked about, like we're not always looking at that. We're looking at, you know, the stuff, and we're looking at,
and
know,
I mean, different... hey, if you want to do like a sexy high strikeout upside guy, like a Hunter Green, like SP3, mm-hmm. like this is a great SP2, you know, to grab, to pair him with, because it's just so reliable and a solid profile to, you know, you can make up with K's and those fun, you know, sexier picks, right?
Yeah, or like we were talking about Cease and Strider last yes. episode. Like, it could be a good follow-up there. But, yeah, I'm with you. I like it. And let's keep rolling, Steve, to another guy with, honestly, kind of a similar profile. He gets a lot of wins. The strikeouts are lackluster. But Tyler Anderson had a fascinating year here with a 15-5 record, 178 innings, so the volume was there. But the K is quite a bit down at 138. The ratios were pristine, a 2.57 ERA with a 1 WHIP. Thoughts on Tyler Anderson? He's another one that, you know, you're not going to have to pay up nearly as much, but kind of a similar mold here in that he's not going to strike out the side. So he kind of falls off our radar a little bit, but what are your thoughts on Anderson?
Yeah, this one's harder for me to buy into. I know he's a free agent this year, so that's going to play a big factor in his valuation, and with this, you know, it's easier to write off a 23% strikeout rate, which is better than Anderson's 19.5%, comparing him to Fromber, when Fromber has a 60-70% ground ball rate, and Anderson's just at 40%. It was one of the better ones and better than the last 2 years, but it's still, I'm finding it harder to look and say, oh, this is why Anderson was successful, right? There's nothing that jumps off the page to me other than, you know, maybe a 256 BABIP and the highest left on base percentage of his career. You know, that he was a bit fortunate. I know still the xERA and FIP are still in like the mid to low threes, but the xFIP was at 4.11. The Sierra was at 404, so I think it might be more of a high 3 ZRA with not that many strikeouts. It's harder for me to buy in on what Anderson just did, despite the unbelievable surface numbers and great year that he had.
So I hate that Anderson is a free agent, because right away that – you know, that's going to sap the win total for sure. However, I might let me attempt to convince a little bit here, sure. Steve, because he went in the 20th round in our mock draft, which is, you know, at that point you're looking at
free
very
in a
12
team league. That's free, yeah.
And unfortunately, that's also a spot where you are looking for the
upside
stuff type of pitchers that could, yeah, that could explode. But here are some things that I do like about Anderson. He is a top 10 in the league fly ball pitcher, which is scary, but he is 98th percentile on hard hits, which I know isn't, you know, a metric that's completely controlled all the time by pitchers. I know we talk about that's one that's influenced by hitters more often than not, but the fact that he's fifth in the league in soft contact, that to me points back to that 6.4% home run to fly ball rate. His best pitch is a changeup, and he threw it 7 more percent of the time last year, up to like 32%. So I just think that there's like the XBA against was 225. Like, I think that he has a little bit of like deception. And
yeah, he's
I don't want
94th percentile
hitch
chase rate last year, 95th this year. So there's definitely some deception there for sure.
And that's where like the XERA is at like a 310. I get that he is never going to be, you know, the strikeout guy with this current pitch mix and everything. And if he ends up in a hitter friendly ballpark as his home field, I don't want to touch this because of the fly ball rate. But that late in the draft, if I've got a ton of volatility throughout my staff, it might not – like, I could see where maybe he could sneak into this, like, Kyle Hendricks type of stabilizer for a rotation. So I'm not completely out, but I get that it's an unfortunate thing that, like, at that spot of the draft, you usually don't want, like, a glue guy. So I hear you on all the concerns. I just thought it was interesting that, you know, the combination of him being such a fly ball pitcher with such a, you know, an ability to induce soft contact, it seems.
Yeah. Despite the low K rate, all of the hard hit metrics and batted ball metrics are really good. Paired with a good chase rate, that's telling me that hitters are not swinging and hitting the pitches that they want to hit. That there's some deception there, that he's getting his swings that he wants, and hitters aren't getting off their swings, if that's making any sense when looking at his slider profile. So that's a good way to pitch it there. I like it.
Yeah. So closing note on the soft contact is he was number 5 in the majors, and then the names that top 10 list is Chris Bassett, Sandy Alcantara, Julio Urias, Justin Verlander, Tyler Anderson, Shohei Ohtani, Max Fried, Joe Musgrove, Quintana, and then Michaelis. So it's definitely saying, like, I hope he's Quintana, you know what I mean? That type of a mold, but it's just it's good company to be in, but maybe it was, you know, kind of a, I'm blanking on Phillies, Ranger Suarez. Of thing, where
sure.
It's like, yeah,
yes.
How much can you bank on the soft contact and everything? So, okay, well, the next one that I wanted to look at, Steve, was Alek Manoah. And Manoah is again, of this mold that you can count on the volume. There's a wins total with Toronto, but the strikeouts aren't quite the same. 196 innings, 180 Ks, a 2.24 ERA, and a .99 WHIP. Now Manoah was taken at pick 42 in our pitcherless mock draft, so the name value's there. And this is, you know, with his age and his prospect pedigree, it's one you got to pay up for. So opening the floor, curious on your thoughts here for Manoah and what you think on him.
Yeah, I don't know why Manoah doesn't get more strikeouts. Like, all of his pitches have a whiff percentage. Like, the lowest one is a sinker at 16.1%, which that's good for a sinker to have that much swing and miss. His two other ones are above 20%, the slider up to 32%. So he gets a lot of whiffs. It just they're all strikingly low put-away percentages, so... Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's like some strikeout upside, if there's like some sequencing or just like some tweaking that he could do. you know, to get that K rate to go up, because everything else, and you know, you watch Manoah and he's an ace, and last year, despite not having a strikeout per inning, I would still consider him a fantasy ace. Like, he was that good. But I think that, you know, if he could sort of pair the lower walk rate that he had this year with even just 2021's strikeout rate of 27%, like, that would bump Manoah into, like, okay, now he's, like, being, you know, on the question of being a top 10 pitcher. And if he's not drafted as, like, a top 20 pitcher, I know he has some name brand and a lot of people like him. And, you know, it was a really low ERA at 2.24. So I just think that there is some strikeout upside, and he could take that next step. And if there is any bit of a discount, if like people look too much into that the lower strikeout rate for an SP1, I think it's a great back end buy as your SP1 if there is any discount there. But there just might not be, because the surface numbers were just so good.
Yeah, the surface numbers are gonna have him, you know, up there, but I don't know if When draft season settles, I am curious if he will be going this high. But that said, yeah, I mean, everything you brought up, Steve, is like, you know, the slider is really what had dropped the most as like a put-away pitch from 21 to 22. So that this would be a good one to read like a deep dive, you know, on everything going on with Manoah. But yeah, I mean, 6'6", the extension is great, which is why you can't put too much stock into the fact that like his fastball is only 94. I think that plays up quite a bit. Absolutely. With his length and everything. So I like it as the player himself. I did put here, I'm curious, knowing that basically Fromber is going 60 picks later. I mean, what's the argument there? Just that Manoah is going to take that step forward on strikeouts,
yeah,
and be at least a strikeout
per
inning.
That's what you would tell yourself, yes.
Okay.
And just watching right. Manoah, like, you know, he has the and it's probably biased, but yeah, you know, he's more of the prototypical ace than like a ground ball master, right? Like, he has the stuff to be someone that strikes out at least someone once an inning, like a 9K per 9, right?
Yeah, the 26% whiff rate on a fastball, like, you know, that the pitching experts always talk about the fact that if you have a good fastball, that's, you know, that's a hell of a way to start on being an ace. And Manoah has a 26% rate on his fastball, and on Fromber's sinker, it's a 12% whiff rate. So case in point, that one is inducing contact, the other one is getting whiffs. So, yeah, it'll be a good one to keep tabs on this season, but I think maybe somewhere in between on trick or treat. It just sounds like we do like Manoah.
Yeah.
Steve, talk to me about Martin Perez. It's quite a drop on the draft board from Manoah, but certainly great volume with the 196 innings, 169 Ks. Another guy with a sub-3 ERA on the season at just 289. But, and it's a big but there, the whip of 126. This is like the reverse Aaron Nola of low ERA and high whip, which causes some questions. What are your thoughts on Perez?
Yeah, it's like he just kept up that first half from Boston last year. And you know, I'm sure Nick's read up, it was a Vargas rule that kind of lasted the whole year. Maybe we need an update to a Martin Perez rule, although he really didn't have that sort of major drop-off that he had, at least in 2021 with the Red Sox, when I think he was like left off playoff rosters despite, you know, his great first half. And the numbers showed it, too. He finished with a 4.74 ERA this year. He still held, kept an ERA under 3, like you said. This one, it's like Tyler Anderson, just kind of worse for me. Like, you know, Anderson has that elite walk rate. Perez isn't, you know, horrible, but he's more, you know, 8.4%, that's close to league average. I think I'm buying like the ERA indicators here, an xERA of 3.59, FIP of 3.27, xFIP of 3.80. This is more you know, a good streamer slash Toby for me next year, back end guy. And I think you can carry over a Vargas role and just sort of wait for the shoe to drop next year. Although Texas had had some success, like with these older veteran pitchers. So hey, maybe there's that. He is a free agent though this year, so we'll see where he ends up.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth when you said he's the Toby, because it does seem like that. The one weird thing about Perez is it just seems like he always has a month, you know, where it's like it just complete showstopper. And the K's will climb up sometimes, you know, seven strikeouts in six innings versus the Red Sox this year. Seven and six innings against the Mariners. So he'll have a month where he's like 4-0 with a 1 ERA, but it does seem like it happens early on in the season. So maybe just try to ride and stream that. But overall, yeah, I don't think we can expect anything close to a 3 ERA for someone with this profile. And it just doesn't seem like he has, like you said, the control, or, you know, it's not like a clear fly ball or ground ball pitcher. It just seems like there's been quite a bit of good luck when you look at some of the X metrics next to everything. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, beyond just the obvious that this one is a trick, at least on the stat line, if there's anything to add there. I mean, pitcher comps, Brad Keller. Yeah, it sounds like that.
That sounds exactly like what it is. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't think I'm going to be too upset if I miss out on another Martin Perez year again if he repeats. So.
Okay, let's end with a more exciting one.
Yeah, I'm excited about this name.
Luis Severino, who was exciting last year. He was kind of in that, Syndergaard pack of, like, injured former ace studs and what would happen with him. And I think he's going to have some of those same types of question marks just because it's been weird. So he comes back from TJ. Then he has a weird season after he gets some run with a lat strain, hits the 60-day IL, tough postseason outings. But overall, I think the glimpse we saw of Severino in 100 innings was solid. The 3.18 ERA, the one whip, and over a strikeout per inning is probably enough. Some of the velo looked really good, Steve. I think there's... there's reason for excitement here. I think this is much more just about like how far you turn the dial on confidence.
Yeah, I think the only thing sort of holding Severino back was the fact that they just need to ease him into 100 innings. I think that was probably their target. I know that there was an IL stint and he got put on the 60-day and didn't want to, but I really think the Yankees just had this number in mind and wanted to keep him around 100. And I don't blame him. You're looking at his year log on Fangraphs, it's like 6 innings, 8 innings in the playoffs, 12 innings, and then you have to go back all the way to 2018 for when he had 191, and in 2017 he had 193. So really heavy workloads then, and all that injury. But he was a Cy Young candidate in those years. So I really think it was just a matter of the Yankees just watching his innings, and now that he has 100 under his belt this year, I think it'll be sort of all systems go next year. And like you said, everything under the hood looked really, really good. A 28% strikeout rate, just 7.4% walk rate. Like, this looks like the Severino that we saw, maybe not in 2017 when like it looked like he could win the Cy Young. Maybe, I know 2018 was still really good, just a little bit toned down, but that was still like a top 20 pitcher. And I think Severino, like, as long as the innings are there, and I think now he has shown that he could for 100, like, I don't see why not next year, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be his age 29 season. I think we got to remind ourselves that, he's not 35 years old, just because it seems like it's been so long since he's been, it's almost like a Corey Kluber type of thing of, like, the last time he was an ace. Mm-hmm. That said, this price is a little bit, it's not nothing. He's one pitcher after Tyler Glass now. A name that goes near him, Steve, that we kind of like is like a Tristan McKenzie. If you had that side by side, put you on the spot a little bit, Would you lean Severino over McKenzie?
I'll go Severino there. I know it's a tough one. It's close, but I'd go Severino.
Yeah, I think I agree. And again, the velo is up there. It wasn't, like you said, like 2017 mm-hmm. years, but it's still excellent at like 96 and
yeah,
change.
Yeah, really encouraging coming off all those injuries for sure.
Yeah, so he's using the changeup more than he has in the past. It does get some whiffs. I think, this one is one that I'm definitely on board with. I'm really curious to see where his ADP lands. If we can get a little bit of a discount because there's so many good pitchers in that range, yeah. That would be amazing. But I think it's probably going to have to be around pick 100.
That's the good range to take pitchers, like though. You know, like that. If someone McKenzie goes, like I'm cool with taking Severino and having a target there. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that rounds us out, Steve. I know it was kind of a lightning round on a lot of these names,
yes, sir. That was a lot
but
of fun.
This is. Yeah, this was great. Now, you off watching the playoff baseball tonight?
Oh, yeah. Phillies are already – they just look like the team of destiny, man. I think the World Series will probably be over next time we talk, but they're up 4-0, Harper homered. It's just crazy how it just seems like they can't lose right now. But it's been a great playoffs and excited for these last few games in the World Series.
Yeah, for sure. It's just it's cool to see Harper having his moment.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm always down for a little cheer against whoever's playing the Astros, so you know that too. But yeah. It's this is great, man. I know we'll be back on in a couple weeks. I think you and I might have our Nick Pollock hot seat podcast.
Yep, I'm doing between that time my bowl predictions recap, so maybe we could do that as a tentative next show topic. There,
love it. So yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, and talk about some different names there. So. All right, folks, that rounds us out for episode 78. Thank you guys for tuning in. All offseason, you guys can email us, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. I'm Van. You can find me on Twitter @Van_verified, and Steve is @Stav8818. As always, guys, thanks for talking baseball with us, and enjoy the World Series.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.